Mr. Madison, reel 4. Any other memories of Cyprus before we move on?
No, I've nothing much behind to do with that anymore. Just in case of getting organized and ready for the next move up. I was wondering when you were going to. I went from the cruisers, I went across from the. Into Iraq. And we took off from the Queen's Regiment there, just up St. Kilkirk.
Can I take you back to the journey? I mean, it was a tremendous journey on from Haifa, wasn't it, in what is now Israel, up to Iraq. What are your memories of that very long journey?
Well, the only thing about it was a complaint from the Navy, say, because like, we were one deck, and we just have to cook on deck. And if they said if anything happened, they lost the sea, because they used to patrol up from Alex, used to run up that way. And they were lost. They didn't like us on board the ship.
So they get you on and get you off quickly. You pick up transport in Palestine, did you?
I was requisitioned transport for the way.
What condition was that like when you got it?
Oh, it wasn't too bad.
And then you'd move off from Palestine on that long journey through Jordan right up to Iraq. That would be done in stages, was it?
Yes. And we used to go over it was my truck. We had the trucks up there. We had a navigator on, you know. They used to guide us through to Iraq.
Were you following the pipeline? Were you following the oil pipeline? At the end of the day, obviously, at some point you would stop and you'd be staying overnight. What were you sleeping in?
I just sleep on the floor. Well, we used to get a staging area, as we call it. We used to rig a tent up, you know, just lying there. But all the weapons had to be put in the centre of the tent. And a hurricane lamp being on there for the Kurds. They used to be nipping there. We used to strap around the outside. One man and guard on me. The light gun.
Did you lose any? Did you lose any weapons?
We didn't. I think the 6th Battalion did. We didn't lose any.
You got to the big RAF station in Habinia. Do you remember arriving there? What happened?
I remember there was a sign up there, you know, so we those managed to live with me. Oh, yeah, yeah. Of course, they do such small planes there, you know, that sword fishing.
Did you get the chance to clean up while you were there? Because you'd be pretty dirty after that long journey.
How was it? Quite organised for washing your work.
Was it very? It must have been very tiring and boring sitting in a truck all day long.
We didn't sit in the truck all the time. Because each morning up at the station area, you know, stripped with tents. The sailor, he used to get in his truck. Have a sack in his back, nothing in. We had to take the full kit. We had to march to the next steel area because all the guys, it was about 95 men who had to march, which was 3 battalions, and one had a volunteer to march, and the rest by transport. So you had a volunteer to march, but you were in his truck, we had to march, and then you had to ready.
Do you remember the area that you stopped in when you got to the place?
Oh, well, there was nothing there, you just, you know, stopped in the desert.
And what were you doing? Why were you there?
Well, it was about section of the Irish fields where expecting comes on the courses, isn't it? You couldn't have done much actually because we're one brigade, you see, 151.
So were you just digging defences in case they arrived?
No, I wouldn't have done any digging at all. Nothing there.
Well, how did you fill your time in?
Well, there's nothing you could do. We just stuck there, you know. On a weekend, the RSM arranged a truck to take the sergeants up to the Mosel, you know. And there, what a filthy place it was. There were butcher shops, you know, the sausage hanging down, there was a million flies on it, and the meat. Oh, it was a terrible state, there. If you wanted a bath, you go to the bath, and there was a woman bathed you there. The Mosel. The woman used to bath the gloves. from at that time and went up with our assembly. We were in the beer dar called the Tad the Wine, you say. It was a pound of butter. And it was too expensive at night of it, you say. So I said, we says, well, what's the usual drink here? He says, oh, the drink we have is Tad the Wine, they call it. So we were in the jelly glass, you know. And I knocked it off and went away like a light. Next one, I was on the back of my truck. And there was a canteen there, South African. We used to buy, you know, cigarettes and matches and queen cakes. The last one I bought queen cakes, so when I woke up, I had 3 bucks and a match in my pocket. The other time Jimmy came, he says, you're a smart fella. He says, I'm going up there. He says, I expect to go around the hockey tanks. And he says, you're passing it.
It was a pretty bad winter while you were there.
Oh, it was a very bad winter, just like it is here. It was freezing up there. We just used to, at the bottom of the road, saying, I went on big number, you know, the zinc baths, 4 men to a bath. It was that thick on itself. We used to be freezing there.
How did you keep warm?
Oh, I guess I keep myself on the move all the time. Well, that's one truck up there. There was a truck next to me at night time. I used to sleep in the truck, 1500 years. I used to sleep in the truck with boxes and ammunition and that. And we had a big fire, you know, in the centre, and the truck flew in the boat. And what had happened, they were camouflage nets, and the packer tins we had were very thin, the boats, you see. And we're meaning in the fire and the fuse, the truck took up, and the next truck to me. Want to fly up, you know, the sun and the view, the fire along. Once you get the truck on the road, but that's not 1500 yet. See, when the camouflage nets, the packer, and the fuse and the big fire go across, it just open flames fade away.
There was a lot of snow came down. We were able to cope all right with the snow.
Oh, yes, I do the best I could. It was very cold there. And that's what I say when the Yanks were in the desert and the gun carrion came over, it was too hot. I said, well, the winter starts from November to February. It was very hot. We rode 120, 9 o'clock in the morning up there. In the winter, it was cool.
You were there in for Christmas 1941. What happened to you for Christmas? Did you get anything?
TT concert party come up there. We had that. That was one of the big Christmas events. We went Christmas, you know. I was good on that party, and I was going to go and entertain.
Was the food pretty monotonous up in Iraq?
That was just a usual hard tack sausage. If any, if available.
You didn't have many trimmings at all?
No.
Was it a problem keeping the spirits of the battalion up? I mean, you were there about 3 months and very little to do and very sparse area. Did you have difficulty keeping the men's spirits up and interest?
Couldn't have really made of an entertainment. What not you could do?
You didn't use the crude oil for heating at all.
Pardon?
Did you use the crude oil that was available for heating?
Yes. We set out the heaters and all that.
And you're okay, you're safe from the fumes that it was giving off.
Uh-huh.
That must have been pretty dangerous, mm-hmm. I would have thought. So you were there 3 months, and then, of course, you start to move back again.
Start to move back again.
And did you follow the same route back?
No, I went a different route. I can't remember where it was. It was a different route back. And that's where I went to the Western Desert.
And you moved up the desert. Do you remember your arrival at Gazala?
Oh, yes, when the transport was moving up just outside of London, and Jerry came across strapping the trucks. And I was the one thing I had, what I shouldn't have had, my green forage cap I had it down in the truck. I jumped up the truck and lost it. you know, was left there. And the judges stopped to come through with a lot of them.
Can you tell me about the Ghazala books, what it was and what you were doing there?
Oh, well, they were called boxes. It was different stop and gap metals by the gap. They were protection for the jelly moving through, you say. And they're all very mined outside. And this is to take the wear down, you say, at night time.
And you were in this box with entrances and exits, and they had a North Country name.
That's right.
What were you doing there? You know, what kind of things were you doing?
I was just going at it.
Did you get out on patrol?
No.
You didn't get out on patrol?
Not on patrol.
These columns that went out, these raiding columns, did you get in any of those?
Or the Long Range Desert Group, which is SAS down East Road. Did some good work there.
Did you get out on any columns formed by the battalion?
No.
That went out?
No, we didn't take any out. Or the Long Range Desert Group, they used to do all that job.
Were you dug into trenches or dugouts in the sand?
In the trenches.
And it must have been pretty hot, of course, after Iraq.
It was.
Did it cause any problems, the heat?
No, the desert sores used to get me rather knees. Used to get the desert sores.
What caused that? What caused the sores?
Oh, the heat, you know, and the sweat. We used to get rid of the flies. Flies used to cause the trouble. Because anywhere where you're sweating, you were black with flies, and weren't they? If you went to the toilet, you know, the box at night time, that was the best time to go at night because it's quiet, there's no flies there. There used to be pests going there in the daytime. And then the parts of it, as I just went out there, took a shovel, we had dug a hole there. When we started to move from there, from Ghazala, the roads come from nowhere, you know, all the tin stuff we had, all buried. We were riding it all up there, taking the empty tins there.
And did the flies make eating and drinking difficult?
No. The only thing that did for me was the ants. The ants used to pass the air out.
Were you camouflaged into the ground, you know?
No, I wasn't camouflaged at all.
How far were the Germans or the Italians away from you? What was the distance from yourselves to where they were?
Oh, I should have been about 30 miles. That's when I took a patrol. I come to patrol, I was telling them to get out, so I don't want them with the bayonets.
When was that?
In Iraq and Ghazala. That was in March in Ghazala. We went out there. 21st of March, we did not jump. Actually, it was supposed to be a two company job, you see. I went to start line in the morning and got settled there. As daylight started to break, you could see the jerrys, you know, were going to attack. Shaking our blankets and that. And of course, I must have spotted this. And they opened up at the borders. And the sergeant of the 8th Platoon was killed, Sergeant Wistons. And the Lance Corporal lost his eye there. And we had a tank support come in from behind, firing overhead fire. And of course, when I went there and we fixed bayonets, they stopped, you see. And when he came back, he says, "My God," he says, "you're handy, bloke." He says, "You asked for support." He grew up before me. Of course, we took our prisoners, and when we came back to the area, you know, away from the company commander, taking the truck up the brigade with the prisoners, they got a rocket there, so he leaving his company. He should have stayed with his company. And Jerry had a gun there, started a shell up in the helic. But in the afternoon, we were relieved by the Green Horse, and the RSM, we had came up the battalion up to the company. We got a bottle of beer, and the men had been drinking a bar of chocolate.
And this, you said, it was RSM Kit Armstrong, did you say?
Sergeant Major.
You Sergeant Major, yeah. And he'd ordered you to put the bayonet on, had he?
I would just put the bayonet on, but then fire it easily. I was just saying, a chap that was prisoner with me, he was sent to Italy, and I was saying, I went up here and all that one. I said, I never thought about, you know, having to run from gun to gun, about very firing up me. I had one of the stops, you know, the magazine had been signed or something in them. And I used to run back and forth, and I just said, I never thought about very firing up me. Having to get up, you know, and go from one to another.
And this was while she was still in the box?
Yes. I used to call them a stop and gap, a little bit of gap, you know. Granny used to get the mines used to go up at night time, you know, the heat. It was just these mines used to go up. There's only one ice fire being through there. And of course, I got them stuck on the wire and I'd laid a couple of the minefield in, you see, and the gap was covered in running with the mines. We said, we're just standing by. And we just fired up a heart's content there next morning with lines thrown out there the wire. So ice ties were no good, infantry. That good artillery, but infantry was nowhere.
Did you have a little platoon position outside the wire?
We used to send one out at night time. Take a listening post out there.
Did you go on any of those?
No, I never went on them.
You said that you'd fixed your bayonets and charged these Germans. What's it like to be told, now fix bayonets and you know you're going to charge it, people are going to be firing at you?
Yeah, it's a terrible thing to face. Of course, Jerry popped in straight away, so he comes straight in. Of course, we were just ripping the covers up the trench, double Sahara, or say anybody in. I think it was about 19, was something about our company, about 19, but what had happened, when we moved back at night, say about 6 o'clock, the transport, you say, was 1,000 yards behind us. We were back with transport, and we got ordered to get it ready, you know. Seen some troops advancing across. But what had happened, Big Dale Robinson, Major Robinson, the side company, had been a two company job, you see. When we left the start line, they'd taken the wrong compass way, and he went in the opposite direction. They said he heard a fire in our day, but he never knew who it was. Of course, I said, well, I wouldn't mention anything of that. I said, no, about the company. Anybody can make a mistake.
And you said the Germans basically surrendered when you saw you with your bayonets.
I wanted to fire the bayonets when, of course, the lip down the tail, and there was a bayonet on its lips. But it scared me, right?
Have you any other memories of being in the box at Gazala?
No, not at all. Just born at where the position was 6 battalion, you see, a fixed line. And when we start operating, you know, we're firing just over my head of 9-by-2, and we had to get into them, but shipped the bug.
And you say you're with A Company now.
A Company.
And were you a platoon sergeant in A Company?
Platoon sergeant, A Company, 9-by-2.
What were the lads like that were in your platoon?
Well, it was, you know, we couldn't complain about it. The girls always had to complain about something.
Do you remember any of the chaps that you had with you in the platoon?
Well, this was a chap who was with me in the platoon. He just lived in Gateshead on Sulphur Road somewhere, out in Sable. But he was taking it directly, say, when I escaped.
So as platoon sergeant, you commanded the platoon, did you?
Mm-hmm. I was, and when I did it, you see, I had a different sections of it. I went safe across so you could lead them to night time, you see.
It gets pretty black at night time.
At night time, as we were patrolling there, and the whole lot outside, where the weather would change on.
Was it easy to get about the desert?
Well, it was at night time.
And during the day, what were you doing?
No, nothing. I just stayed watching, and then you saw what happened. I say you couldn't do any training or anything.
Do you remember the time when the Germans and Italians came close immediately before they started to attack you?
I would never had much contact until we got moving back from Gazala.
Now, that was the breakout, wasn't it?
That was a breakdown.
What are your memories of that breakout?
I had a reorganised from Gazala, Cape Mandolin. That's where I had a reorganised, moved out. And when we got down, at the Associated Motor Mitchell, and all the nappy stuff was, pulling the trucks, emptying the store. And we were in a square shape water here, company. But when the daylight broke, Major Slade came up. And he asked for company commander, Captain White. And he said, show them where to go. He said, have a look at that. And then his glasses were over mine the hallway. He said, the transport coming in. I said, well, at the, a British truck, he said, oh, well, it was Johnny had said to me, see, and they started to shell the place. So Slade went away. We go down into the trench again, waiting for our breakfast of being cooked there. All of a sudden, Johnny started moving the shell of theirs. Took the road straight in.
Did you see Wakenshaw get his VC?
Pardon?
Did you see the Wakenshaw action?
No, he was with S Company, you see, at that time.
Did you know him?
Oh, yes.
What was he like?
Funny lad, he's sent papers on Scotland Road, he was on there. What a funny lad. Because 6 months later, when we went back up there, and his body was still on the ground.
So, the Germans took you prisoner here, did they?
Mm-hmm.
What happened to you then?
Oh, well, what was that lying there? When we first moved in, there was a 105 gun firing. That day, you see, and they dropped all the prisoners just beside it, you see. Well, the 74th artillery was firing under there, you see. So a corporal came across and he says, no one's wrong to name it on a boot. I says, the unit. And the boss says, by the way, I says, you're not allowed to put the troops here, you see. And then he didn't know what to do. He said, get yourself moved back. So I moved him back. And during the night, there was a British lad on the weekend, Harry was at the heading base, I went to see him, and me and Harry was together, and all of a sudden, we were put in charge of the right side of the escort, and this column came through and it started to open up, you see, and I always remember, 15 on the way, and the 3 tonner, and I was up on the way through it. I just got past it when the tanks came across, we had a lie down. No, as I said, they kind of depress their guns and they kind of say, and actually, when I first tell, there were Indian troops had come through, you see. They didn't know it was a prisoner of war carrier there.
So, what did you? You jumped onto one of these Indian troops' trucks?
No, Indian troops had been going straight through, you see. They must have been behind us when we come from Moses Mitchell. And I went out one day, light broke, I was looking about and said, well, am I here? I says, well, the sun rises in the east. So I said, I'm walking northeast, and I was walking across there. And the truck came up, the scout truck, you know. My son had like a major Lawler. So I told him, I said, you're damn Spanish. He said, well, I've only got 4 armored cars left. I'm going back to Mina, their base. He said, I'll take you there and make your way back. So when we got a good meal there at that time, and we're getting fixed up from a bit of the rust. When Jerry started shelling, he hit the 1500 weight and the 3 ton and set fire to them. Well, I moved up straight away. When I got to Mina, I got lifted up to Cairo, from Cairo to Abbasia, out to Geneva, reported on there.
So So you had quite a journey.
Well, quite a journey.
And were you on your own for part of this journey?
On your own.
So you said then you finished up at Geneva. What happened to you there?
Oh, we're trying to get back to Bretagne, but we're bringing troops in, and our reinforcements, and we got to kick them out of the Middle East scale and send them on the units, and they wanted to keep us there, you see. Well, I wanted to get back to the battalion. So what are talking? The order room staff, the RSM, said there's two prisoners to go back to the 8th battalion. So I had a team with an escort, and went to the 8th battalion when I got there. She said, God, you haven't brought these two boys back again, eh? Of course, when I got there, I contacted the 9th, to say, I seen me brother. I contacted the adjutant, Zach Dodgett, and Jeff Beattie. They got us back to the battalion because they were keeping us up there. Well, once I got back to the battalion, the Talalees, Southside Ireland, I was there a week. They sent it to Palestine in the course, for a colour sergeant. I come back, I was colour sergeant with S Company. I was Mad Rubble in Robinson in Newcastle.
That's another Robinson, is it?
Robinson, he's used to be in the Brodies, who said a pub in the big market, you know, the Chancellor's used to be in there. And my name on a roll, we didn't see eye to eye. And I tried to left to see his colours on, and I was transferred to Bay Company. When I got to Bay Company, the lad that was colours on there, Tommy Nummins, he had jaundice, they went away, and I was colours on the Bay Company, so there was Major Water for the hunting home. I went on from there. He was a bit of a lad, he said, come up with me. I had no idea. He said, colour sergeant, he said, a man could do with a few more potatoes. When he go up and said, the quartermaster, I said, you can't get this, he gets your issue. And because we're scared, 5 minutes of known, so there's pepper and salt and all that, you know. So I went up. So I seen QM plod. He said, don't you come here asking to get anything? So I expected the situation. I said, well, I told her, what? I said, madam, I said, a sack of potatoes would feel a bit silly. I went back, plodding him out of an argument, you know. And then he got settled there. What was it, Connie Blue, Waddle? He went there, he's a gentleman farm on Somerset. But when the war finished, when the old John Bull used to be out, you know, I read an article in there from him, and I got his address. He lived in Somerset, and I wrote through to him.
He had quite a reputation, didn't he? Blowing his hunting horn when he went into action. What did the men think of him doing this? What did the men think of him?
Oh, I thought, love him. Well, he's quite a good guy.
They didn't mind him blowing his horn as he went forward, did they?
No.
What was the job of what is the job of a colour sergeant?
Well, they equip the men, say that they're fed, you know, for us, and for them, feed them. They've got to be kitted, and then they're wanted. And then he went to the brigadier. When we came on the line, and the men, you know, the haversacks on me, I had a hat in the back, you know, green lady and whatnot, and then left some of the stuff in the trenches where we'd been. Move box where I had to make an invent out for the soldiers and the men, you see. And I put him in, I was at two shooting bushes and a razor. I put them in. When I put them in the QM, he handed them. He said, I'll give you an IOU for them. So when he got his IOU, I was sitting through them, you know, open drawer them. So in the meantime, when I had a kit inspection again, one of the boys had lost a shooting bush, you see. So I went up there and I thought, oh, it would be cushy there. So he says, what have you? He says, by the way, he says, you've got an extra shaving brush on you. So he says, Plimley, you know, he's talking. He says, let me bring you 108. I said, oh, I've had it there. That was a book, you know, very soon. He says, I said it was destroyed. He says, it was full, through him there. He says, if I thought you were trying to get kid by false pretenses, I'd have to bring it here. Forget the shaving brush.